This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.
Welcome to The Infinite Consciousness this week, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and boy, do I have a treat tonight. We have with us Dr. Bruce Lipton, and not only do we have Bruce, but we have all of his energy, like being here. He's bubbling. How are you, Bruce?
Absolutely wonderful, Eva, and it's just so exciting to have this opportunity to talk. I appreciate that because of the hours that we have and we don't know that we have. I'd love to talk about those. So
good
whatever
team.
We go.
Well, tell us a bit about you, and I don't want you to talk too long, because I want you to talk mostly about your work, but I want people to know who you are and where you came from.
Okay, well, I got my PhD degree at the University of Virginia, and my research was on cloning stem cells, and it's interesting because a lot of people think, well, stem cells are this, like, current hot topic that's going around, and my first stem cell cultures were in 1967, so that was 40 years ago working with stem cells. And they are profoundly important cells, and they taught me everything I know about life, so I'm very appreciative of them as well. I took my PhD and then did a postdoc in the University of Texas, and then ended up at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine, where I was on the faculty in a tenured professorship, finally, in anatomy and teaching cell biology and histology and embryology, and all that time also cloning stem cells and doing research on stem cells until about 1980. And at that point, after I'd published some very groundbreaking, pioneering work on the nature of how cells work, and finding that my colleagues were not very interested in this because they were so interested in the genes, that I also realized that I was teaching medical students information that I now knew was incorrect. And feeling out of integrity, I walked out of the university. Had a little hiatus, produced a rock and roll show. You may have heard of the musician. I found a musician, Yanni, and I took him out of school, and we put on shows, and then I had to go back to biology because biology professors are not generally good rock and roll entrepreneurs, I find out. it was a big learning experience, but I ended up with an opportunity to go to Stanford University School of Medicine to continue on with those novel experiments that I was working on, and published my papers there, and then at some point left thinking, this information is too valuable to not get to the public right now. So I've been lecturing on this new biology since 1985, and I'm so delighted because all the things that I had talked about in my research and found in my research have now become recognized as fundamental new biology, and I'm very excited because after all these years, also the understanding of this new biology is so empowering that I just have the greatest charge and energy to go out there and talk to people, let them know that they are more powerful than they've ever thought they were, and in regaining this power, which is knowledge of how you work, how knowledge of self-power, this frees us from a lot of misconceptions. That was a lot of stuff.
That was right? Fabulous, and I hear your enthusiasm in your voice. It's wonderful.
I'm just living another beautiful day on this planet, and it's so hard because I see so many people struggle, and I was there, okay? So that was part of my whole thing of leaving the university and losing all my money and all that kind of stuff. It was like, well, that was a wake-up call. And what was really interesting was that when I started to understand the nature of the biology, and there's a second part which people should know, and that is when I started with this biology, it was really academic awareness in my head, and I would go out there and tell people, my God, let me explain this new biology to you, because if you understand what I'm talking about, you can see how you have this infinite power over the controlling of what goes on inside your body and as well as in your outer life. And they'd look at me and they'd cock their heads and go, you know, for a guy who says you know all this stuff, your life doesn't look that good, Lipton. And I felt myself and almost said this to, I mean, I'm so glad I didn't, because that would have been the most embarrassing thing in the world, but I closely said, oh, well, do as I say, not as I do. And I realized...
I have to tell you, I do say that thing. Do what I say, but just, you know, do what the teacher says just because she says do it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I wasn't.
Don't go through what she goes through.
Yeah, well, but they looked at me thinking, if I knew how to have a good life, how come my life wasn't so good looking over there, you know? And it was basically because the second step, which is the most important part, learning the information is really great. The second part was not just learning the information, you actually have to do something with the information. You have to apply it. And it was like, oh, my God, that was the missing step, because I'm just thinking, well, I'm consciously aware. I know this stuff, but my life was still the exact same life I had anyway, in spite of this new awareness. And so the catch is, no matter, you know, when we talk and when people are listening to other people on your show as well, there's a part where you understand it, but then there's a part that if you don't apply it, then it turns out to be valuable information, but not very useful in your life, and that's what I realized.
How long? I want to ask you a couple of questions before we get really into the meat of your question. The first one is, after you started practicing it, how long did it take for an effect to occur?
About 15 minutes.
Good deal.
That's the absolute truth. Because I just thought, it was just sort of like, it happened so fast because it was one of those things, make up your mind not to run by automatic behavior and your automatic reflexive responses. At this moment, say what you want and make your point. You know, don't compromise yourself anymore, which we all do in a sense. We compromise and disempower ourselves in that process mostly. And basically it was like, do this and say it. Don't think about it. Say it. And I started to realize, God, as soon as I started to speak a truth of myself, my life immediately changed and started to be more conforming to that truth than it did to the other way I was living.
How did the manifestation of math change?
Yes. It's hard to say because people listen to me and say, oh, man, that guy's kind of weird, you know. But it's like, okay, first of all, let me clear this up. I wasn't weird when I started this. I wasn't even a spiritual person. That's why I was so deep into the sciences, because I was actually running away from the people who always had these wonderful spiritual things to say. And then you look at their lives and it was worse than mine. So at some point, it's like, well, I don't think following that path at that point was worthwhile. So I went into science and avoided spirituality, and the cells essentially hit me on the head with a hammer in revealing the nature, which I recognize now, is that our identities are not even inside the body. They play through the body, through the cells. And when you understand this, then you start to get into some physics, which was something I didn't know about but then had to learn about. And then you start to realize, my goodness, as the physicists recognize it, the observer creates the reality, and that's where it really becomes important, that we do create this reality, and we manifest things out of that creation. And to some people, it's total magic, like, wow, that something happened. To some people, it's like totally skeptical. You just happen to be the lucky guy. To other people, they just look at it and can do better than I can. So it's like I'm beginning to realize this is not the world that I thought it was before I understood how cells work. And once I understood how they work, this is a different world now.
Now, we're going to be talking about some things, consciousness and mind. And before we get started, I found out that everybody has a different definition of just what those things are.
Yes.
So what are your definition of those things?
Okay, well, let's start with, I'll start with consciousness, okay? And consciousness, to me, is having an awareness and a responsive awareness where you are observing the reality and then, you know, meeting that reality with behavior and whatever else you do as an understanding of that reality, and then, able to live in harmony with that reality. So consciousness is an awareness of operating your life in a reality. Subconscious, and this is very critical, and we'll talk about this later, but you might as well, let's get this right to the point. This is the biggest issue, I think, in the whole world about why change is difficult, and that is because the subconscious is a very powerful information processor, but it is not a creative device. The subconscious is a stimulus response device. It's basically all it is. It learns environmental stimuli. It makes a response. It's sort of like a reflexive action. It's programmed from experiences. and you push the button and it plays the behavior, and it will play it the same way over and over and over the whole life until you change it. But here's the point, is that it's strictly a like tape player, records and plays back. But why it's relevant is because for most of us, there's been this belief that we acquire, especially from the school psychology and general mass psychology information, that, oh, you know, well, if you become consciously aware, then you've changed your mind in a sense. And the fact is, you may become consciously aware, but it will never necessarily touch anything in the subconscious. So, you know, you can do like cognitive therapy and you find out, oh my God, yeah, my dad did this to me, my mom did this, and these people did this, and now you see the mess I'm in, and you think, well, now that you've discussed this and you know all this, and all of a sudden you're going to be better. And the reality is no, and the reason is this: your consciousness now has made new awareness, but your subconscious has not doesn't take that in. It's already got a program. And the issue is we have a tendency to talk to ourselves, and most people do that, like, oh, I got to stop this, I got to fix this, I can't do this. And with the essence that, like, who are you talking to is the first question.
And who are you talking to?
Well, this is the problem. You're only talking back to yourself. You're not talking to the subconscious because it doesn't listen that way, and there's nobody in there. That's the thing that I think is the biggest point that we have to recognize is, A, there is nobody inside that subconscious to have a discussion with you. You know, there's nobody in there. It's a tape player. Boom, that's it. And the idea is you can change the tapes, but you can't change the tapes by talking to the tapes. Just as much as if you have a tape player at home and you put the tape in and you push the button play and the program's going, you don't like the program, and then you stand in front of the tape player and talk to the tape player about why you don't like it, and they get upset with it because it's not changing, and then start yelling at it because it's still not changing, and then calling God in maybe to change the tape. And that's what we do in our own minds. We argue with ourselves, and it's like, well, wait, you're arguing with a tape player and there's nobody in there. And that's the big problem.
I have a question here. Where does God fall into this? Because some of the scientists call God consciousness. What do you call God? How does
okay.
that figure in here?
I figure in this, okay? And again, remember, I come from spirituality now with a roundabout way. I dropped it as a kid, went into science full out, that I'll learn everything about the world and the universe and life by understanding science. To come back out of that with the realities, oh my God, that I misguessed that one, that in fact that it makes a complete understanding about how we are made, and this is a very interesting because it's a biological truth and it's a biblical metaphor or something, but they're both the same. We are made in the image of the environment, and I call the environment all that is, because that's all there is, and that to me would be all that is God to me. Okay, so I call the, but some people call it. It's interesting because the physicists have been talking about it, and they call it the matrix. I mean, this is where Max Planck came. He called it the matrix, and the movies, of course, are based on that as well. There's all new kinds of words. I mean, I think Stephen Hawking has come up with a recent one, but the physicists have really agreed with this. And now that I've gotten into the physics enough, that I say, yeah, I believe yes, the matrix is all that is, and that we are made in the image of that, so that we are actually a physical expression of a field of information, and that field is outside of our body and exists out there whether we're here or not.
How do you think that information is conveyed from that field into conscious mind?
I feel that it's basically that, and this is where the cells come in, okay? And so now we'll take a step back, and we're going to bring up that question. But first, let's let people understand something first about themselves, and that is this. I look in the mirror. I see the single entity, Bruce, looking back at me. Eva, you look, and you see Eva looking back, and all the listeners see themselves as this individual entity. And the thing that's really interesting is this is a total misperception. We're not an individual, single anything. We are, in truth, a community of upwards to 50 trillion cells. It's the cells that are the living units. And we are truly a community of cells. As a matter of fact, you know, if I reduce you down to the size of a cell and let you look at yourself, you would see a thriving metropolis of 50 trillion citizens, because they're all like little people. Every cell has its own little life going there. Every cell, and here's an interesting fact. You can look at the human and look at all the functional systems in the human, digestive, respiratory, nervous system, reproductive, excretory, and all these things. Every system that's in the human body is already present in every single cell. Every cell has a musculoskeletal system. Every cell has a brain. Every cell has an immune system. This is an absolute truth. Every cell is like a miniature human. Okay? Now, here's the issue. Their brains are as large as ours, so their world is much more narrow in their vision than our world is, okay? Our world is large because instead of one cell looking out our eyes, we have, you know, millions and billions of cells, and so all of a sudden it's like, well, you got millions and billions of times more awareness than any single cell has just looking out one eye. So all of a sudden you start to see, it's like, we have the same functions as cells, but we're just the effect of mass cellular consciousness. We're like collective amoebic consciousness. Our thoughts and our experiences are shared by 50 trillion cells, and that the cells are responding to our central nervous system, and the central nervous system operates under the mind. The mind is like the programmer, and there's two parts to the mind, as we mentioned, subconscious, which is the automatic stuff that you do every day without thinking about it, from getting up in the morning and washing your face without thinking about it, to driving the car while you talk to somebody and then realize you haven't paid attention to the road. Yeah, the subconscious can do all that stuff because it's more powerful than the other brain anyway, the conscious part. So we have 50 trillion cells, and they're listening to the tapes from the subconscious and our creative information coming from our conscious mind, the thoughts that we generate. And to them, that's their environment. They listen to that like we listen to, like, CNN. So as every human in their house is watching CNN, every cell is, like, plugged into our mind, seeing what we're seeing, watching what we're watching, you know, living in fear of what we're in fear of, and all these other things. Their news is like our news. So why that becomes important is that it pretty much is an interesting fact that the way you're living in your outside life, you have almost a vibrational equivalent going on your inside life as well.
What role does the autonomic nervous system play in this, if any?
Well, the autonomic nervous system is part of the processing that can happen. It's part of that subconscious mind. And it handles details that we can handle, because everything the autonomic nervous system controls, which is like fight or flight reflexes or growth reflexes, or depending if it's sympathetic or parasympathetic, the cells are responding to this in the very same way. And so it's very interesting is that this is part of the subconscious mind. And it's controlling the 50 trillion cells and how they're responding to the world. But what's interesting is the conscious mind can control any aspect of that autonomic nervous system. There's nothing we used to talk about in medical school, the autonomic nervous system, called the involuntary nervous system, controlling things that we thought you can't control. Now it turns out, with full awareness, that humans can control every physiological function in their body. They can raise the temperature if they want to raise the temperature. They can change the heartbeat. They can change the pH of the body. In other words, with consciousness, you have absolute control over everything. But in our lives, consciousness can't carry on too many. It's not a bigger processor like subconscious, so it doesn't have the ability to carry on too many different things at the same time. So the subconscious is very helpful because it will carry out all the details that I don't have to pay attention to yet. Mm-hmm. It's just important to recognize we can control every single aspect. There is nothing in our physiology that is not under our ability to voluntarily control. That's a real important thing.
Do you think that there are gradients of conscious awareness?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
How does that play into what you found in your research?
Well, this is why cells came together, for example. If you understand that, you know, when we talk about the nature of how the cell works, that the brain of the cell is the equivalent of the cell's skin. And the significance is the first 3 billion years of evolution was the evolution of the cell. There was nothing multicellular here for 3 billion years. There was bacteria and amoebas and paramecia and some yeast and algae, but there were no multicellular, meaning communities of cells. All cells were free-living cells. this was the evolution of creating the most powerful cell. The brain of the cell is the skin of the cell. And in levels of evolution, you can see that there's one thing behind the evolution that we generally look at, and that is the advancement of awareness. That is seen, as the underlying arrow of evolution, is that you get more advanced awareness. Well, the first 3 billion years, the cells were, evolving, and their brains were their skin, but it reached a maximum size because the skin of the cell, imagine a cell like a water balloon, with a balloon with water in it,
mm-hmm.
and that if you put too much water in the balloon, the skin can't hold it, and the skin bursts by itself. And so, therefore, there's a certain safe amount of water. In other words, you can stretch the skin so much, but if it gets too stretched, it won't hold the contents.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happened with cells. Cells were making more membrane through evolution, but they reached a size that was about the maximum size for a cell, because if it got any bigger, the membrane couldn't hold all the cytoplasm, would break apart. So like evolution was making the smartest cell. Then you got to the smartest cell, then the evolution stopped, because you couldn't make a smarter cell because it required the cell to get bigger, and that made it a little bit fragile. So that's where it stopped.
Okay.
And then evolution changed and it said, oh, now to make a smarter cell is you hook one cell to another cell, and they share their awareness, so that instead of one cell having one membrane, the two cells come together and share their, now they have two membranes.
Mm-hmm.
So they have twice as much information. And the more cells that come together and plug in with each other, the more they share information. And this is what happened in the evolution of, so first there were single cells, then communities of cells, and the ultimate, not the ultimate, but near the top end are human beings, where this is a multicellular community, putting the most intelligence into a living organism, and the ability to respond to the world is this, the equivalent of this human body. And it's interesting because the human evolution essentially ended at that point. We were like the cells. Okay, now you maxed it out. Yeah, the next level of evolution was just what the cells did, and that is you bring the individual units together, and that's where civilization started to evolve. So first there were cells evolved. They led to organisms, which included humans. That was the next level and max level. You made the smartest organism just as much as you could make the smartest cell. And then the same thing that the organism, the multicellular organism, did is what the single cell did is, well, now that you maximize that, to make it smarter, hook them up with other cells or other people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what, and what's evolving, and people don't see it, is that it's not humans that are evolving. It's human civilization as a living, organic, biological entity that's evolving.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're in a very critical stage. And to me, so you can say, well, a lot of people look out the window scared as hell. It's like, oh, my God, this thing's falling apart. And they're, it's like, what's going to happen? And the other side of it is this is a pattern that's playing itself out. And it's a very exciting pattern, because we're leaving behind a stage of civilization that maxed out its effectiveness and now has gotten into, it's overboard now, and it's actually destroying itself. And it's leading to another level of evolution of humanity. And we're in the throes of leaving behind what I would roughly call a reptilian version of humanity, and are quickly moving in to the next level of humanity, which would be the more mammalian characteristic humanity. And what does that mean? Well, mammals are nurturers, and this is what we're beginning. This is the wake-up call. You better take care of this planet, because if you don't, we're all dead. Why? Because we're made in the image of the environment. Well, that's what we talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
But we're destroying the environment, which means we cannot survive in the world, because this was not the world that we reflect. And so we're destroying our own environment without knowing it. We're destroying ourselves. And
do you see a timetable on that?
Well, I feel it's imminent. I think
mm-hmm.
that the 2012 is a very important to recognize that 2012 doesn't. A lot of people have a misconception that it's the end. It's the end of an era. It's not the end of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
That's and this could be a change. But what people have to recognize is, by 2012, we've already figured out where we're going next. What that means is, whatever it is that precipitates 2012 is happening a lot sooner than 2012. And in fact, It's interesting. It's just whether people are going to create it because they believe it, or it's just because people are repeating it very much, that something is up, and probably within the next year or two, it's like it's going to hit the wall next year.
What do you expect to see? I wasn't planning on asking any of these questions, but I'm glad we're going here. What do you see from your perspective?
Oh, this is exciting because what we're going to do is we're going to have a disassembly of the way it is now, because here's what's happened. We live in a world, it's a reptilian world, in a sense of being, the difference between the state of humanity now and the state of humanity we're evolving into is the parallel of the reptiles giving rise to the dinosaurs, and then there were the mammals at the same time. The mammals were the little furry guys, and there's Tyrannosaurus Rex out there, and they were here both at the same time, but the dinosaurs crash and the meek take over the earth, the mammals.
Mm-hmm.
We, and listeners of your show, I very much presume, are part of what are called the mammals. We're here to take care of ourselves, take care of our families, take care of our planet, and taking care is a character called nurturing, and that is the character of mammals. And the difference between where we are now with the dinosaurs and the reptiles and the future mammals is dinosaurs and reptiles are conscious but not self-conscious.
Right.
Now, what that means is they do what they think they need to do right now without thinking of the consequences of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, George Bush is the head reptile. That's because it's interesting because this reptilian phase of civilization is running off the blood of the dinosaurs. The character of the oil of the dinosaurs is infusing the power of which we run the civilization. And he's the, you know, representative of the oil monsters, which are the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting part about that is that what he did was at some point, I'm sorry about that beep. what happened was this, is that, just to give you the reptilian character of it is this, he said, we need to get into the war right now. Did he think 6 weeks down the road? The answer is absolutely not. We've been paying 4 years for that, okay? This is a way, this is called consciousness and reptilian, meaning you do what you need to do right now, and then you do what you need to do next. And what's different is mammalian consciousness is very different. Mammalian consciousness looks at what needs to be done, but also looks at it and says, what is the consequence of this for the future? So that it doesn't just do things, but it does it based on where is everything going to go, okay? So where are we now? We're in a government that's just responding from one crisis to the next crisis to the next crisis, creating further crises as they go down the road because they're only just putting Band-Aids on things, one thing after the other. And then there's the people that are listening to your show. And they're beginning to say, wait, this place is getting a little wild. I got to start taking care of some. I got to be more responsible. Take care of these things, okay?
Mm-hmm.
These are mammals, and they're looking for what is going to happen to the future of this planet? Not what's happening right now. We got to know about that to see where the future's going. So are we in our evolution? We're at the stage where the dinosaurs crash, and that's corporations. They started from little reptile, like little lizard businesses, like mom and pop businesses, and then these businesses grew to monster sizes, like dinosaurs, which they are. And
interesting
the idea,
perspective.
What's that?
Interesting perspective.
Well, it's part of my book that's not being written yet because I got a lot of stuff going on. But that evolution is not Darwinian. Evolution occurred. It wasn't in a Darwinian concept of competition, and this is the big issue we have to face in the world right now, is that changing this vision, because we live by a belief of a Darwinian world where people think about the struggle for survival and the survival of the fittest, and it's like, wait a minute, this is not what evolution is based on. Evolution is based on completely opposite. Evolution is based on cooperation, not competition. That the biosphere, if you look at it, is one giant cooperative living venture. And the only ones that are not cooperating right now, of course, are us. And that's why the biosphere is looking at us as the equivalent of a virus, destroying the harmony and the balance. And it would shake us like a virus. And this is what's happening. Those people that don't change their reptilian beliefs about life are going to pass like the dinosaurs, and that the new world is going to come to the mammalian group that are going to form the communities and the harmony and treat the planet well and treat each other well to be part of a harmonic nature, which is what harmony is all about. And this is part of the evolution. And where are we right now? We're at a place where the government doesn't even care what we're talking about and as destructive as anything could be. And this is why it's like, yeah, we're pushing this button now.
Are you familiar with David Hawkins' work?
Yes, Power versus Force.
Yeah. What do you think accounts for the gradients in human consciousness? Now, why some of these people, why these dinosaur or these reptilian people, why they do not get it? No matter how much we tell them, and no matter how much scientific proof you put out there.
This goes right back to the earlier discussion that said, look, we have two minds, and we have a subconscious mind which runs the show. I didn't give this fact before, but here's a relevant fact. The two minds, conscious and subconscious, are both running the system, but here's how it works. 95% to 99% of our cognitive behavior or response to the world comes from the subconscious program mind, and only 1 to 4 or 5% comes from consciousness. And therefore, the issue is if your subconscious mind has got programs that do not support you, the problem is they're operating 95% of the day. And yet the nature of the subconscious mind is that the nature is called subconscious, meaning it's below your level of consciousness. It operates without you even seeing it. And I'll give you a great example because people understand what I'm talking about. I go like this. I say, let's say you know someone and you know their parent, and you recognize that this person's behavior is just like their parent's behavior. And then you voluntarily come out and you say, you know, Mary, you're just like your mom. And the first thing you realize is that Mary doesn't really take to that usually. You know, she'll look at you like, what are you talking about? And be upset that you even made that comparison. The joke is, everybody else can see that Mary's like her mom, but Mary can't. And the reason is,
though, Bruce?
Because it operates from the subconscious, and the subconscious, its function is to operate and control everything you're not paying attention to.
But why I just can't grasp,
yeah.
Why can some people do it automatically and those other people just stay stuck there? I just can't understand.
Because this is the issue of, let's say you have a program that says that you have limited abilities and powers, which almost everyone on this planet has. I mean, when most people were young, when you got sick, it wasn't go heal yourself because you can biologically. No, you're sick. Well, we must take you to a doctor. Well, what does that mean to the kid? The kid says, when I'm sick, somebody else fixes me. Okay, so we give up the power over our health in that period. And we give up powers as kids when it's like, who do you think you are? You don't deserve things. You're not good at. These are things people say to kids and don't realize that the first 6 years of a child's life, this is a straight download hypnagogic recording in their brain, into their subconscious. The consciousness of a child doesn't really start functioning until after six. And the Jesuits, now they knew this, and they would say, you give us a child until it's six or seven and will belong to the church for the rest of its life. What they knew was this. The first 6 years of the basic programs, whatever those programs are, I don't care how much your conscious mind will wander the rest of your life, your subconscious has just been programmed, and that is the rest of your life. And so that's what they said. That once you give it to me, the kid, by six or seven, the program is already in there. Well, this is a true story, but now we have to turn it to our regular lives. Each one of us went through that period, and each one of us downloaded how to respond to life and how to create the behaviors and do all the things that we do fundamentally from a download before six. And as I said, this operates when you're not paying attention. I'll give you a good example. I mentioned when you first got in the car with a driver's permit, you didn't know how to drive the car. You drove with your conscious mind. Some people get so frozen because it's like too many things to pay attention to at one moment. They can't even drive a car. But it's like fills up your mind. Look out the window, see the mirrors, watch the gauges, listen to the engine, all these things going on. But now you've driven the car, and you've driven it for a long time. Guess what? You get in the car, you have a passenger in there, you get in a discussion with this passenger, and then you look out the window and you realize, I didn't really pay attention to the road for the last 10 minutes. And the reality is, well, you didn't have to. The subconscious drove the car, and the subconscious is a million times more powerful than your conscious mind. It's far better at driving it anyway. But here's the point, and this is the catch, and this is your answers your question, but it also brings some information to the audience. It goes like this. Yes, you just drove the car. You were in conversation. Your conscious mind was in conversation for 10 minutes. The car was obviously driven by the subconscious because you didn't pay attention to it. But now the question is this. Describe your driving behavior during that 10-minute period when you were having the conversation. The answer is, I can't. I wasn't paying attention. It's like, this is the point. This is the rock-bottom point. It goes like this. The subconscious does this thing when your conscious mind is wandering anywhere. You're thinking about something. Whatever you're doing is being run by the subconscious mind, whether it's working a machine or writing something at your desk as your mind flips off somewhere. And you write things. And most people know this in their own exams. They get their exams back and they go, my God, I knew the answer this way. Why the hell did I write this answer? And the reality is because most of us got some programming that we were just average kids. And since the subconscious was running the show, if you would have gotten too many questions right, you would have not been an average kid. So the subconscious mind will actually make you have wrong answers to bring you into the program of being an average kid. We become programmed, and then our unconscious mind makes sure that we live to whatever those programs are.
Interesting.
And yet, then you say, but why not if I just talk to these people that they'll change? And the answer is, because their subconscious minds are tape players. And you can talk to them, and they can talk to themselves, and it still won't change that way. That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. It doesn't change by conscious reasoning and logic, because in the subconscious, there's not an entity that is conscious or reasoning or logical. It's a machine. And so if you own that, then you have to realize, oh, our disconnect has been that we, as a conventional individual, believe that we run our lives with our wishes and our desires. I want to have a great relationship. I want to be healthy. I want to be wealthy. These are all wonderful wishes. And it's like really cool. Then things don't work. And then we think to ourselves, well, obviously it's not me. It's just I'm not getting the breaks, or the universe is not supporting me. Why? Because I have all these positive intentions and they're not being realized. So it can't be me. And the idea is what you didn't notice was, while you were even thinking positive thoughts, you were running off your subconscious. You didn't see the behavior, just like Mary doesn't know her behavior is the same as her mother's, that most of the behaviors that we got before six are limiting behaviors. Just watch any family of kids and parents interact before six. It's always, giving the kid the instructions and all this stuff like this and who they are and stuff. And the issue is, that's the mind that works 95% of the time. You could be 50 years old, you're still running off of the fundamental programs that you got when you were six unless you change those programs with an intention.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't believe this is passing so fast. We've only got 20 minutes. I want to ask one question. And then
we never even talked biology, did we?
I know.
Oh.
but I have one more question I want to ask you.
Yes,
where, from your perspective and the work that you've done, where do spiritual epiphanies all in there? You know, one minute somebody's walking around the world as a fundamentalist, and the next minute they're spiritually awake.
Yes. Well, in a sense that, I have to own that the event in my life in 1985 when I understood how the cell worked was a scientific epiphany, so to speak, which I guess is the parallel of a spiritual epiphany. Yeah. And as I understand it right now, and as I understand it, and as it conforms to modern physics, which is exciting for me to say because it's like airy-fairy to some people, but it's like, no, what I'm talking about is modern physics, and it
right.
says this,
right.
that the reality that we live in is an immaterial reality, and it's created through consciousness, and that it becomes important for us to recognize that our identity that is like the driver of our consciousness is actually not in the physical body. It's out of the field. And what's interesting is when people get their intuitive jumps, they're not actually entangled in their conventional world, in their body and paying attention. They're out of body. What does that mean, out of body? That means your consciousness is now no longer being programmed through your life experiences. You're now tapping into much greater awareness in the outer field. That's where we come from anyway. And so when there's this opportunity, when you jump to this intuitive level, you are actually looking outside of the filters we acquire through our life experiences and giving you a much bigger picture, which allows you to bring things back in. And so like artists and scientists, this is the realm they work in all the time. Artists, they're in their head someplace. They're not in their head. They're actually out of their body at this point in a field. And scientists go out to this field, too, to get because the answers aren't in their physical world. That's what they're looking for. So where do you get the answer? If it's not in the physical world, you got to go somewhere else.
Have you ever compared the structure of the cell of an enlightened person to someone that hasn't had the experience?
No, I haven't done that. I mean, basically, one of the things you can see is the energy levels are completely different in these people because.
From a scientific, logical point of view.
From a biological point of view, is this all biological entities, and you know, like as humans or dogs or cats or trees or whatever they are, require energy to operate, because without the energy, there's nothing's going to happen. Okay, we have energy, and we. In our minds, there's like an accountant in there who puts energy into the different systems as you need them. When we're living in low consciousness, then we're living in the programmed fears of the planet that we live on as taught to us. And when you live in those fears, your energy is not put into your growth. Your energy is put into your protection. And growth and protection, and this is stuff I learned in the cells, of course, growth and protection. A cell cannot be in growth and in protection at the same time because they're mutually exclusive in this regard. If something out in your world gives you growth, you move to it with your arms open to take it in. If something out in your world is a stimulus that threatens you, A, you don't move to it, you move away from it, and B, you don't keep your arms open, you close yourself down to protect yourself.
Right.
So basically it says growth is moving toward the stimulus, open for assimilation, and protection is moving away from the stimulus, closed in protection, walling yourself off. Now, a cell cannot move forwards and backwards or be open and closed at the same time. Cells are either in growth or protection. Well, the cells in your body, we have 50 trillion, and the fact is, well, the brain is got certain things that it's involved with growth that it likes in its life, and it's got fears that it lives in protection as well. And the fact is, the more protection you live in, the more you take energy from your growth processes and fund your protection processes. And that's where why stress becomes the biological killer that it is that when we live stressful lives, we are not providing enough of the energy of our system for the growth mechanisms, which are required every day of our lives, because every day we're losing billions and billions of cells, and you have to replace them every day. But people who live in fear or high stress divert their energy flow into the protection, because it's like paying for the army, okay? And what happens is that their life energy is a lot lower because they're allocating more energy into the protection mode. And that actually kills you. Too much protection can kill you because it walls you off from the outer world. That's the problem.
So would you think that, think about Fritz Popp's work a minute, do you think the light emitted from the biophotons in the cell would be brighter in someone who was spiritually awake?
Well, there'd be different lighting for sure, because the physiology, every time we have physiological behaviors, biochemical actions in our body like respiration and movement and digestion, every one of these processes involves shuttling electrons around, which are the gas pump, and the electrons, as they shuttle, give off light. And so as the cells are alive, they're giving off all kinds of light in regard to the processes that they're expressing. And I think the growth processes are there's much more activity in growth than there is in protection. Protection is essentially no activity, wall yourself off and reserve your energy for that fight or flight moment. And growth is turning on the machines and keeping the body healthy and maintaining it and keeping it in good shape and making sure you keep your health and live the minimum, the 140 years that we're supposed to live. And that's minimum. so why are we not living that? And the answer is because we live in a world that's so stressed out and so competitive and so misunderstood that we're killing ourselves in the sense that a cancer kills a body, where I said the body is 50 trillion cells, and what are cancer? And cancer are cells that pull out of the community. And you say, well, why would cells pull out of the community? And the answer, as there's a bottom level here, is that most cancers have a high degree of anger attached to them. And mm-hmm. and then you say, well, what does that have to do? And the answer is, well, if the anger's in the mind, and the mind is always in a mode of anger, who's listening? And the answer is 50 trillion cells. Mm-hmm. And how many days of anger and perpetual anger can from the top until some cells, oh, you know, it's like, oh, we've had enough of this. Boom, they pull out of the community, and that's a point of where this anger is has just taken the energy out of the system and can lead to its death. So,
okay.
Yes.
We have about 15 minutes, so what I'd like to do in this last 15 minutes, I know that you've proven that intention has measurable effects in cellular activity.
Yeah.
So take these last 15 minutes and give them the best information you have, because I want them to believe us.
Okay. Well, first of all, let's just do straight science and not woo-woo stuff, okay?
Okay.
And the first science is this. It's called the placebo effect. It's taught in medical school maybe about 15 minutes out of a four-year education. And it's there it is, and forget about it, and let's go on to medicine. Yet here's the biggest problem. It's an established fact that one-third of all medical healings, even surgery included, one-third of all healings are strictly attributed to the placebo effect. Mm-hmm. And the effect is that what you're doing is you have an intention to heal yourself, and whether you use an icon like a sugar pill or some electromagnetic device or whatever it is, if that's what you believe in and your intention is to heal, you will heal yourself because your consciousness is creating the character of your body. And why this becomes important is because, yes, we talk about the placebo effect. It's very powerful. My goodness, there's so many kinds of experiments, you know, that show the nature of the placebo effect, meaning your mind can adjust every aspect of your physiology. I mean, you know what's interesting? Multiple personalities. Because as they switch from one personality to another, they change almost all their biological parameters, including their EEG. And EEGs are almost like neurological fingerprints, that each individual has their own EEG. When these people change personality, they change EEG, but they also change their immune system. They change their muscular skeletal system. They even, you can see their facial changes because the muscles, some muscles will get tighter, others looser, and they may have diabetes in one personality and not diabetes and the other personality.
How does that happen so quickly? I read about that in your book, and I can't grasp how it happens so quickly.
Okay, and here's how it happens quickly. Every cell is a programmable chip. Every cell has a gene hard drive. It's got all this. Every cell can make an entire human or any part of an entire human. Every cell's got all the instructions. So every cell has complete potential. What that potential is, or how it's expressed, is based on what's happening in the cellular community called the individual, okay? Mm-hmm. So that as our thoughts and our beliefs change, it changes the cells. Well, how does it change that fast? And the answer is because the surface of the cell has these antennas on it. So let's try and give an analogy. Look at the keyboard on a computer. Each key has a different letter or signature, you know, a symbol or something on it, right? And I'm going to say that on the surface of the cell is the equivalent of a keyboard, where this key responds to glucose, and this key responds to histamine, and this one responds to adrenaline, and this one responds to estrogen. And I start to list all these keys are responding to these signals. The signals come from the mind, released by the brain, okay? So the signals are released, and then these signals, like, let's say, estrogen is released, and it binds to one of these keys on the surface of a cell. It pushes the estrogen key. It's the same as pushing a key on your mm-hmm. computer. It brings an instruction up on the screen, right?
Question
as
here.
Does
it take focused intention to do this, or just can a random person just do this?
A random person can do this, but they also have to recognize that if their subconscious mind has no support for what they want to do, then they're in a struggle until they change that subconscious mind.
Okay.
Meaning, the subconscious mind is most powerful. And most people's subconscious minds have been programmed the way we grew up as doubting things and, oh, who do you think you are, kind of stuff like that. And, oh, these people are shams or quacks. And therefore, most of our subconscious beliefs are actually very limiting beliefs. And therefore, if you want something to happen that other people call a miracle, but you have a belief system that was grounded in some family that says, oh, there are no miracles, those are, you know, just crazy people and stuff like that. If that's your belief and you try to do a miracle with that belief, the answer is not really going to happen.
Okay.
And yet, you know, you can change the program, and that's the real critical part. But the idea is that how does a cell change that fast? Because every cell is like a little chip with a keyboard on it, and the environmental signals type on that, and as fast as they type on it is as fast as they redirect the program of the cell, just like as you can redirect the what's on the screen of your computer by typing something new into it. It's as fast like that.
Now, I think somebody told me that you, I think it was Dawson Church, told me that you had done some experiments unraveling DNA. Is that you? Am I right about that?
No, that wasn't me. My experiments were essentially take the DNA out of the cell.
Okay.
And the issue is that if you remove the DNA from the cell still has a life, and it's not just sitting there. It has the same life it had before you pulled the DNA out, meaning it's breathing and moving and eating and coordinating all of its biology and its physiology, and it's responding to other cells and responding to what's going on in the environment. And yet it does this with no DNA, and many cells can live up to 2 months with no DNA in it. The experiments are very important because the first premise that you read in all books, especially current textbooks, will talk about the genes and the nucleus of the cell, where the genes are, the nucleus being like the brain of the cell, controlling the functions of the cell. And the answer is that really true? And the point is no. Why? You take the nucleus out and it still has the control. And that's where my research back in near the end of the 70s when it started to get focused, 1980, when I left the university, it had led me to it. I said, oh my goodness, genes don't control anything. Genes are responding to the environment. And this is where my published research had revealed. And then I was understanding the mechanism. That's where the keyboard part of the cell and how that actually works became part of my research. But it really revealed was this fundamental flaw. DNA does not control anything. DNA is a blueprint, and to give you just an idea of it, so we let's say we go to an architect's office and they're working on a blueprint, and you ask the architect, is that blueprint on or off? And well, that's the point. They look at you like, what are you talking about? It's a blueprint. And it's like, this is the point about genes, because we have bought as a way of life, everybody says, oh, this gene turned on and that gene turned off. And the fact is, wait, genes are blueprints. There is no on and off to a gene. A gene has no on or off. That's a scientific fact, but it's not written in a book. And why is it relevant? Because if I tell you that genes can do on and off by themselves, then that allows me to tell you that you're controlled by your genes. But now I tell you this, genes have no on and off, and that and it's the perception of the cell, what the cell sees in the environment, that determines how that gene's going to be read. And here's the shocker, this is a kicker. With this new mechanism, which is called epigenetic control versus genetic control is what you and I learned in school. And what I was teaching, genetic control says control by genes. The new science, and it's replacing, it's like, it's so phenomenal, it's going to change civilization. It's called epigenetic control. What that means is epi means above. Like you say the word epidermis means the layer above the dermis. Epi is above. So if I say epigenetic control, literally it says control above the genes. And all of a sudden it says, my God, all these years we have been teaching that the genes are in control, and epigenetics now reveals that the control is not in the genes, it's above the genes, and it turns out it's so far above the genes, it's the mind. The mind, through signaling, through brain chemistry, changes the readout of the genes, and here's the kicker I was going to tell you about. With this mechanism, a single gene blueprint, and using epigenetic control, I can create over 30,000 different products from the same blueprint. And all of a sudden it says, oh my God, that means that every gene you got is plastic. You can turn it inside out, upside down, turn it around. And here's the issue. Most of us got here with perfectly good set of genes, but through our own experiences and epigenetics set ourselves up for disease. And here's the other interesting flip side. Those people that actually have mutations, using epigenetic mechanisms, can rewrite those mutations and not be affected by them. So
now, how long, if somebody had some genetic disorder,
yeah,
how would you tell them to, we've got about four, let's see, about 6 minutes. How would you tell them to do it?
Okay, and the first thing that I would
much
have to...
How much energy would they have to place doing it, and how long would it take to get an effect?
Okay, this is a whole range of questions. So the first thing is just going to have to say, the first thing that a person with a genetic defect has to look at is, A, was it a birth defect, or B, was it acquired? And then B is to identify subconscious beliefs that are not supportive that may lead to that. And you can use like Louise Hay's book to see where the cancer is, and because each part of the body has an emotion attached to it.
Mm-hmm,
and she's a good reference for that.
And, I do that, by the way.
What's that?
I had an epiphany about 5 years ago. When I woke up, I had that ability to do what Caroline Mace does.
Well, that is, people have this, except that most of us don't go there because of our programming. When kids have exceptional abilities, parents almost essentially say, "Well, don't show that to people. They'll think you're weird." And essentially, at some point, shame the child into not showing these exceptional abilities, and then eliminate the things that you have learned how to do. And this is an ability that humans have. And yet most of us can't get there because our belief systems won't allow us. So you went bypass your belief system and pick that up. So this is part of that. So basically it's to find out, is your own belief system in some way, you know, supporting this process? And then most importantly at that point is then to recognize that beliefs, not just of the individual, but beliefs of the community are very critical. Because the beliefs are not contained in our head. They form a field, and Rupert Sheldrake talks about morphogenetic fields and the fields outside. We have belief fields. And if you're in a community where everybody believes you can't do something, you can't do it. And the perfect example is Jesus. He could go anywhere else and do miracles, but when he came back to his hometown, he could never do a miracle in his hometown.
Really?
Why? Did he lose his power? And the answer, no. The field in his hometown said, I knew that when he was a kid. Who does he think he is? Basically, the field around him was that he couldn't do it, and he could not do the miracles in his own hometown. He had to go where people didn't have that belief about him. So this says, very important, if Jesus couldn't do a miracle in his hometown because the other people didn't believe it, you try to do the miracle in the middle of a community of people that are so locked into the medical model that say you can't do that, because that's almost everything they say is you can't do these things. And the problem about that is if you buy into that belief, and as I said, most of us were programmed that the doctors are right, that's an early program that keeps us from really trying to get our way out of that thing, because our subconscious says, no, you don't do healing, the doctor doesn't. But the idea is we have limitations of belief, and that's our biggest problem, not just the belief of the individual, it's the belief of the community. Everything is changeable. The miracles that were done thousands of years ago are still doable and are being done every day anyway. And they're not really as much miracles as, if you understand the nature of the science, is like it's almost an expectation to have this ability.
Well, I could spend about 3 more hours.
I didn't get to talk about cells. We have to do it again. Even I didn't even get the cells in here. But let me just suggest that people, if they might be interested in this stuff, my website has a lot of free articles and references of things that I'm talking about. They're free. Download them. There are articles on all different topics that we've talked about. It's simply brucelipton.com. And they're free articles, so they can expand on this, because we still need the other 3 hours to get going, Eva.
And you have a book out, Biology of Belief. You've got a new one coming out, and you're also doing some work with Greg Braden.
Yes, I'm going to Europe.
You've got to promise me you'll come back and let's talk about those things.
I would love to come back, because we didn't really get into the biology.
I know it.
Say, hey, I listen for the biology. Hey, where is it? It's like, it's on the next time we're together, I guess, right, Eva?
Oh, my dear. Thank you so much for coming on.
I really appreciate it.
And I do want you to come back, if you will.
I would love to.
Agape, my friend.
Thank you so much, dearest.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.